Well, thank you. It's kind of interesting the similarities that you hear that the various different people have talked about, not so much in terms of their background, but definitely in terms of what you need to do in order to be able to get a job in industry. I'm going to give you some of the same information, but I'll give you my background in terms of how I got to where I am. And which one of these is it? Okay. I grew up, I was a military brat. So my father was in the Air Force. He put in 30 years. We traveled a lot. You know, people talk about uprooting your kids and moving them someplace else and how that is tough on them. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I lived in lots of different places. You learn to have to adapt. You learn how to get along with people. It's a great experience in order to actually prepare you for when you want to move into whatever you're going to do in the future. Well, since I was a military brat, my dad did a lot of traveling. When I got close to high school age, my parents decided that it would probably be best if I did stay in one place through high school. So for high school, they put me in a military school. So I was in a military boarding school. Wasn't that difficult because I grew up in the military. My father was, you know, everything was about the same. But then I left there. I went to Texas A&M University. And when I got to Texas A&M, now I was free. I could do whatever I wanted to do. And I did. And I did extremely poorly in school. So at that time, we had the Vietnam War and we had the draft. And I was one of those fortunate people when they did the lottery for the draft. There's 365 different levels you can get at. Mine was 23. So I was going to go. Well, I was working. I got a summer job working for a company putting in stadium seating. And I was trying to decide, do I want to go back to school? What do I want to do? And so I went and I called my draft board and I just explained to him, you know, what do I do? He said, well, what's your draft number? And I said, 23. And he just laughed and he says, boy, you're gone. So that's when I decided I'd look around and I decided to join the U.S. Coast Guard. So I spent 4 years in the Coast Guard. I worked search and rescue. They taught me how to be an aviation mechanic. I worked on electronics. When you're in the military, you grow up very fast. And I look at that as also an excellent experience. I learned how to take responsibility for what I did. The responsibility that I took also had an impact on other people and other people's lives. So as I got toward the end of that career, working in the Coast Guard 4 years, it was tough. I mean, I was on Cape Cod for 3 years. But we did search and rescue. I had an opportunity, should I stay in the military or should I get out? And I really learned a lot. It was a good experience for me. But the big thing was I grew up in the military. My dad was a pilot. My dad was an officer. I was an enlisted man. Big difference. So from that, I realized I need to get an education if I'm going to be able to do anything with my life. So I then went to the University of New Hampshire. And it was good. It was a good school. It's not a great big ag school, kind of like University of Rhode Island. But I got an excellent education, a good rounded education. They taught me an awful lot of things and what to do. The other thing that was important about going to school the second time around after having been in the military, by then I was married. Back when I was at A&M, it was easy to write home and say, things are tough in school. You can't do that to your wife. She does not accept you're not getting good grades. So I worked very hard. The recommendation, you need to get good grades, it's very important. So I did that. Well, I went there thinking I wanted to be a forester. You know, I lived in New England. There were lots of forests. We'd go hiking and camping. So I get into forestry programs. And since I had already had some school at Texas A&M, when I came in, I had a significant number of hours already. Not very good grades, but they still counted as hours. I took a few forestry courses, and I very quickly realized forestry is just another crop. It may have a 20-year harvest cycle, but it's just another crop. So I started trying to decide how do I want to focus my life, and I got involved with apple trees. Again, I'm working with trees, single season. That was an excellent choice for me. I really enjoyed that. And then I stayed there for a master's degree, working in the plant sciences department, little bit with plant growth regulators, but primarily looking at water relations in plants. Then came the time graduating, I got to find a job. So I looked around, having worked in apples, looking at where's the best place to go for apples. I applied to a lot of different universities, a lot of different places. But one day one of the students came in, there was a graduate student that was looking for various jobs, and he said, hey, he got this job announcement from Washington State. Maybe you'd be interested. Perfect. It was on apples. It was everything I wanted to do. They interviewed me on the phone, and I got hired. And so I came to Washington State. That would have been in the late 70s. Things in agriculture were very good. And I worked there for 3 years, and I had a major professor that was very much involved in teaching. He had an 82% teaching assignment. So he only had 18% involved with research, but I was fortunate because I had a position that was funded by the university. It was on hard money. It wasn't soft money. So we had a great working relationship in that we would figure out the research programs we wanted to do. He'd send me off to do them. I'd do all the field work, collect all the data. I'd run the stats on it, give him all the tables. We'd sit down and work on trying to come up with results. He'd do the literature review. We'd publish. He was one of the most published people in that department at WSU, and that was the horticulture department. And he had a very small research commitment. But it was very collaborative. We were able to get a lot of things done. One of the things that we did while I was there is we worked on that product that's up in the top right-hand corner. It's Promelin. It's a plant growth regulator. We worked on some of the early work for using that to increase branching in trees. And that association of working with those people, when they would come in, they were paying for the research that we were doing, got me very interested in what they were doing as an industry. They ended up with a field development position that was open. I actually went to talk to them about a graduate student who was in our department, trying to say, this is the guy you need to hire. And the more and more we talked, the more and more I thought, you know, this is a job I would like to have. So I said, I think I'm going to apply for it. And I got it. So I started working for Abbott Laboratories. Kind of like Derek. I started, it's 29 years ago. So I worked with Abbott, and during that period of time, we had a very broad background of things that we did. Field R&D people did everything. So I was fortunate. I worked on plant growth regulators. I worked on our biorational insecticides, Bacillus thuringiensis. We also have a line of BT products that are used for mosquito control. We sell an awful lot. Our company does sells an awful lot of mosquito control into Africa for West Nile. We get involved in the U.S., Pennsylvania, black fly control. So that product is Vectobac. Vectolex is another BT that's used for controlling mosquitoes. Centauri was a product that's another BT that was very specific for BTs that were or insects that were resistant to BT. So I was fortunate in that during that period of time, I got to work in lots of different areas. I got a very good background of the different products and programs that can happen out there in the field. Then the company was purchased by Sumitomo. Derek talked about that a little bit. We became Valen Biosciences Corporation. Well, here I was working in field R&D. I've been doing it for 13 or 15 years. We got bought by a new company, and I had the job offer I could not refuse to go to work for Cargill, a private corporation. They had a business that was a startup business within their corporation. Their intent was to take some of their waste streams and see if they had any type of PGR effects. So it was a marvelous opportunity. So I went there. Within 9 months, I lost my job. They closed that business unit. One of the disadvantages of working for industry is sometimes they do change their mind, and it happens very quickly. So I was unemployed for a short period of time, but during that period of time, my wife and I quickly realized we're not going to lose the house. We can start, you know, I can take my time a little bit and see if I can get a job. So I ended up working for Certis USA, which eventually became in a joint venture became Advan. And in that one, I was able to spend an awful lot of time looking at insecticide side of the business. Again, it was a biorational company, but I learned an awful lot about entomology. And that product, Sidex, that's actually a virus that's used for controlling coddling moth. I was involved in introduction of that product in the United States. But one of the things about working in entomology is you very quickly learn that all you got to do is kill them. You don't have to do anything else. And everything is measured on, are they dead or not dead? At least when you're working in herbicides, there is some, little bit of PGR effect to it in terms of how you make your applications and what they do. But insecticides, you got to kill it. So it didn't take long to realize that that is not what I wanted to do. My background had been a lot of work in plant growth regulators. I wanted to go that direction. So Valent Biosciences had another position open up in field development, and I applied for it. I actually went back to the company I had been with before. It doesn't happen a lot in industry. Usually when you go, they close the door and they don't want to see you again. But I went back to work with Valent Biosciences. And I have a unique set of skills in terms of plant growth regulators. I have a long background with that. There aren't many companies I could work for to do that. So you learn something and learn it very well, but make sure you also have that broad background, because I could work in entomology. I understood the basics of doing field trials, field research. I had that opportunity. But going back to Valent Biosciences has worked out very well for me. I want to point out, though, from Abbott Laboratories, when I first started there, and Valent Biosciences, and then Cargill, and then Certis, and then Advan was part of that, and then back to Valent Biosciences, I worked out of my house, the same house, for all those years in California. So I have not had to work in an office. I one time had a meeting with a cotton breeder. It was Delta Pine and Land's cotton breeder in California. And they originally had, most of their breeding was done in Mississippi. And he got sent out to California to breed varieties for California. And I was talking to him, and he'd only been there a couple of years, and he was saying, everybody kept asking him, how did he like living in California? And he says, well, I got great weather. We got a lovely house, and I'm 2,000 miles away from corporate headquarters. What do you think? That's exactly the way it is. I work out of my house. I talk to my boss periodically, not on a regular basis, and I can pretty much control my own time. So what are my current responsibilities? Well, now I have a job as global technical development for plant growth regulators, and it is global for me. So what I do is I provide technical support for all of our plant growth regulator lines. Now, in some cases, that may mean that I have to put out field demonstration trials, and I get involved in new product introductions with things. I work just like Derek, in terms of when we first started, we did work with various different growers and such like that. Holly is setting out trials where she's working with universities. I still do some of that. But primarily I'm supporting our existing product line. And that can be in the case of I do label development. I may set out trials myself that are used for efficacy trials with regulatory agencies. I write the portion that has to do with use instructions. So when you get a label for a product, somebody had to write that. And it's going to be somebody that has field experience, and regulatory is going to get involved in that in terms of making sure it meets the guidelines from a regulatory standpoint. But writing something so a grower understands how to do it is going to be a field person that does that. I review labels, and one of the difficult parts of it, I do go out on product complaints. We're fortunate, with insecticides. Go back, I did that when I was with insecticides. If you don't kill it, the grower calls you immediately. Plant growth regulators, there's always some science there, but a lot of art. So when you go out and you start talking to growers about what went wrong, you can usually work it around and teach them what they did incorrectly so that that PGR didn't work. It wouldn't be in the marketplace if it wasn't working someplace. Another disadvantage or advantage, depending on how you want to look at it, with PGRs is you can grow a crop without them. They are value added. You know, you can grow grapes. Everybody can grow grapes. But if you want them to be the big grapes that you see growing, that you see when you go to the grocery store, now you're putting gibberellic acid on it. It's a plant growth regulator. Somebody has to be able to do that. And then from a global standpoint, international support. This has been one that I've really enjoyed. So since I've been back with Valen Biosciences, these are the countries that I've been to, some of them multiple times. And I'm going to support our products, talking to the growers, and it's amazing. A grower in California will ask me the same question as a grower in South Africa or in Chile or in Spain. They all have the same concerns. They all think about the same way. All you have to do is be able to express that to them and show them what it is that has to be done. So it's a great opportunity in that I get to go in lots of different places, see lots of different things, and interact with a lot of people, and mainly, you know, the farming community. So recommendations, you've seen these things before. Get field experience. Get a broad experience in terms of knowing how to do various different things. When I did the work, when I first started doing work in entomology, it did not take me very long when I was talking to a grower to realize, I don't know anymore. This is all I can tell you to do this, but I don't know anything else. And then when you have to go to a university and talk to somebody there to convince them to try to test your product, and they ask you the simplest of entomology questions, you don't know them. So get a very broad background in terms of understanding agriculture. And get field experience, get hands-on experience. One of the problems that we have in a company is when we're trying to recruit people and get them in, and we start looking at their background, look at their resume, and look what they've done, if all they've done is work in a laboratory, unless we got a laboratory job, it's going to be difficult to try to hire that person. In most cases, like Derek said, we wear a lot of hats. So you have to have something that's a lot broader than that. And then it's also, if you're out in the field, you get out, you go out to meet a grower or something like that, you better have something else to talk about than just what you did in the laboratory. Because otherwise, they're going to turn you off immediately. So part of that communication is making sure you have a very broad background and a very strong education. And network. You know, you need to do the network. The people that you know, the people that you work with, are the people that you're going to rely on as you move forward in your career. Just today I was down and I ran into somebody that I met when I was at WSU. He was on a faculty and I was a technician there. But talking to him about various different things, it's great because I know now in the position I'm in, if I need him as a resource, I can go get him. And he will do things with us. And I can use that to my advantage and for his advantage. So try to network. Don't just go to a meeting, sit in the back, take notes, and leave. Get out, meet people, shake hands. Get away from being nervous about going up and introducing yourself to somebody because you really need to do it. And you need to do that now. You don't want to do this. Oh, crap, was that today? So that's mine. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but there haven't been a lot of questions, so I won't be embarrassed if there's none. Yes?
That had PhDs. What were for you the advantages and disadvantages of not having a PhD and still looking for positions in research within the industry?
Well, I mentioned earlier something about, you know, there's a lot of women out there, but there's not a lot of women that are coming up here. It's an age thing. Back when I started, a PhD wasn't a necessity. It's getting to be more of one now because of the competition. If you're going to find somebody that has a master's degree or a PhD, they're going to be looking at experience. And if the master's degree has the right kind of experience, they will be seriously looked at. But in a lot of cases, they don't have the experience. Whereas with a PhD, they have much more experience. And if nothing else, they've proven to the company that they can go through a program and complete it. And generally, you would say that somebody who has gotten their PhD does know how to write something. And we spend a lot of time writing technical things. One of the big differences between academia and industry is the speed at which we have to work at. You know, we have an annual cycle, a funding cycle, we get to the end of that one. We have to have all of our reports written. We have to have all of our tables done, all our presentations put together. It's going to happen now. You don't necessarily have that in the university. So that's where having a good education and probably the PhD helps, and that person is going to be very sound in their skills in terms of being able to put that information together and put it together succinctly. Okay, thank you.